This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this unseasonably warm Wednesday evening here in Winnipeg. Joining us on the program this evening, Drew Spivak from ESPNDenver.com. Talk about tomorrow night Jets-Avs game. 7 p.m., 1 hour's time. Dean Brown, he's the Senators play-by-play broadcaster on our sister station in Ottawa, TSN 1200. He's going to join us to talk about the coaching moves made by the Ottawa Senators. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg, a freshly shorn Ezra Ginsberg, I must say. You got rid of all... You had some hair going on there, Ezzy. Normally you have a shaved head, and you had some hair going on for a couple weeks, and now it's all gone again.
Yeah, and it's kind of a weird time to do it, too, because it's so cold out, but it's been a couple weeks since we've done... 3 weeks since we've done a midweek show.
Yeah, it has, based on the Jets having played the last two Wednesdays. So we're pleased to be back here, and I say good evening as well to Richard Pollock. Richie?
Good evening, Drew.
How are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
I'm doing very well also. Thank you very much. Let's get started right into it with the Jets defeating the Dallas Stars last night 5-2. Adam Lowry, 2 goals. Blake Wheeler, a goal and an assist. And Dustin Byfuglien with 2 assists. You know, this, I had trepidation going into this game in Dallas. The Stars had been playing at a better rate than they had been for most of the season. They just defeated the Montreal Canadiens by a 4-1 margin on Saturday night on home ice. They'd been playing well. I think they had points in their last 5 straight games on home ice. I think I gotta stop doubting this Winnipeg Jets team when it comes to them playing against their weaker opponents. Yet again, they've done what they've been doing all season long, taking advantage of teams that really, statistically, it says aren't as good as them, and dominating the game, which is what you saw last night with that 5-2 score.
When you play against teams, I agree with that, Drew, when you play against teams that are around or below you in the standings, and I think you play a predictable kind of defensive game. I know they scored 5 goals last night, but the idea that they stay within their lanes, you know, it's all those cliches, but they're true. You play a certain way consistently, you're going to beat teams that are around or below you, specifically below you, because they make mistakes. And the Jets have run through a bunch of teams here, and I think they're better than, and I also think a bunch of teams here who, on defense, and there's been some goal scoring lately by the Jets, on defense, these teams have lacked talent, defensive awareness, many different things. You look at the Edmonton Oilers defense, you look at the Colorado Avalanche defense, you look at the Buffalo Sabres defense, Columbus Blue Jackets, Dallas Stars. The Jets are playing against teams that, frankly, can't defend well enough and are good offensively at times, but not great. And so the offense of those teams is, you know, the offense is being lost at the expense of the fact that they can't move the puck up the ice. And one thing to note here, Drew, you look at the way the Jets are playing against these teams that we just talked about, and, you know, I'd say those teams are weaker than the Jets for the most part. All of them, I think, actually. What they're doing is the Jets are also using their speed and size. And I think one thing under Paul Maurice that they've been doing a lot better is they're more aggressive than they used to be. Team toughness, mm-hmm, and individually, and I know those go hand in hand, but I think that's a factor. They've been using their speed, getting it on the forecheck, sustaining pressure a little bit better, involving their defense, and that goes into playing as a 5-man unit, covering for each other. I mean, they're playing really well right now. Now, against the good teams, sometimes they have trouble, but they're in the games.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to, I think first and foremost, it speaks to coaching.
And it's amazing, 3 months into the season here, Richie, and it's really fascinating to me how we're talking about Winnipeg beating up on lesser opponents, because there wasn't one person, mm-hmm, at the station, maybe with the exception of Huss, who were picking the Jets to make the playoffs. And I think when you look at the Colorado Avalanche and you look at the Dallas Stars, two teams that are obviously on this road trip here, Colorado they just handled last Friday at the MTS Center, but these are teams that are struggling with adversity here. And we talked to Brian Engblom about this, who covers the Colorado Avalanche in addition to the Winnipeg Jets. This was a team who started off the season losing one out of their first 13 or 14 games. I forget exactly what it was. And it was a team that wasn't projected to win the division by any stretch of the imagination. Sure, you know, you were expecting them to be better after getting Nathan MacKinnon. A player like Nathan MacKinnon can make you instantly better. But
you're talking about the Avs last season.
The Avs last season.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And now they're dealing with adversity. You look at, for me, the thing that was most surprising about yesterday's game is the Dallas Stars had to be playing more desperate than that. You're in a situation where you lose two or three more games in a row here, and you're out of it at Christmas. And they're almost out of it at this point. We know how hard it is to make up 8 points as the season goes on here.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, 25 and 24 points respectively, Dallas with 25, you're 8 points behind the LA Kings for that last wild card spot, and you're already in a position where these are must wins. The Dallas Stars have not beaten a team in the Central Division yet this year.
Yeah, you can't really overstate
that. We're 28
that.
Games into the season, and they haven't beaten a divisional opponent yet.
You're right. We made fun of the Oilers for that pretty much up until they won that Western Conference game against San Jose on Sunday night. But, you know, those, you're right. The Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, we'll talk more about the Avs next segment when we preview that game. They're both struggling. And the Winnipeg Jets, to their credit, and I think we are seeing a bit of a fundamental change with this team's attitude. And I think you saw it last night when Mark Scheifele, not the guy, you know, Mark Scheifele, who normally every one of his teammates has to stick up for him when he gets knocked down easily, is standing up for a guy like Michael Frolik. Here's Paul Maurice on Mark Scheifele coming to the defense of a teammate.
Well, I thought we were doing that a lot, maybe to the point we didn't need to do that all the time. Careful not trying to control that too much. You know, you these guys are a really close-knit group, and they spend a lot of time together, and they like each other. So some of that is just reaction. We've got to make sure that we understand that hits are going to happen in this game, and we don't have to react to every one. But I love it. Young player like that feeling like he's really a part of the team, and every one of those guys is his teammate.
I think as a Jets fan and in the Jets dressing room, you do have to love Mark Scheifele coming to the defense of Michael Frolik in that situation. A bit of a high hit, questionable whether or not it was legit. I thought it was a little bit too high. But Mark Scheifele, a guy who's not known for getting engaged in, you know, physicality and in fisticuffs, without a second thought, comes to the defense of Michael Frolik.
Yeah, and, you know, Richie, that was a chippy game yesterday. You saw Ryan Garbutt on two occasions.
Mm-hmm.
With a slew foot, and I know you wanted to get to that because he has a hearing with the NHL Department of Player Safety, but you had some chippiness out there, and yeah, I have no problem with Mark Scheifele sticking up for himself. You know, against most guys, especially a guy like Jason Demers, you probably don't want him really chucking the knuckles, but it's symbolic, I think. And I think there is something to be said about this team, and you know, they've gone 7 games now here with a point. And some of those points, some of those games, I should say, could have gone either way. Some overtime losses, and you know, the Anaheim game comes to mind, where really that game could have gone either way.
So could the Boston game.
And you could make that argument about the Boston game. But yeah, I think you are seeing a little bit of a different attitude with this team, Richie. And I think a lot of that has to do with they've seen what it's like to win now as opposed to last year. And I think they like it. I think they like winning, and they want to stick up for each other, and they want to make sure that they win these games. And, you know, they're in a good position right now, especially when you talk about some of the games coming up against Buffalo and even Philadelphia. They're not looking too good. They can really make some hay here, as it's said. And aside from the Wild and the Sharks, really, to me, those are the only two threats for that last playoff spot right now, because Dallas and Colorado... I mean, I don't know if they realize how dire the circumstances are right now.
They're both out. I don't think either of them have a chance of making the playoffs. A realistic chance. I shouldn't say a chance. I should say a realistic chance. You're 10 points behind the Jets if you're Dallas. I mean, Colorado's a mess. Colorado can't get the puck out of their own zone. So come and talk to us when you can get the puck out of your own zone.
Sure. Which isn't going to happen this season. I mean, there's no trade you're going to make in you know, mid-season that's going to turn it around like that.
And Dallas, from that perspective, well, Dallas had a similar problem. Now, what Jim Nils tried to do is address that issue. How has he done that? Well, he's traded Brendan Dillon, more of a physical guy, a tough guy, mean. I like Brendan Dillon. Trade him for Jason Demers, a skill guy, puck mover. Bring in Klingberg. You got two puck movers there you've added, and now you're going to give up a little bit on the other end if you do that. And so you can't have it both ways because you're not trading. You can't have it both ways because you're not trading for a two-way guy who's a top, you know, $5, $6, $7 million defenseman because those aren't available.
Right.
So you're trying to chip away at it, and I applaud him for his creativity, Jim Nill, but there are holes in the roster. Another thing, you bring in Jason Spezza, clearly increases your skill level. Bring in Alex Hemsky, same thing.
He's a healthy scratch.
Well, right, but you also increase your expectations, and you probably also you certainly are lessening the physical toll you're putting on the other team. So it's a little bit different dynamic there, and maybe we all underestimated that. It's long term, I think obviously there's value in the fact they traded a guy like Alex Chiasson, who's, you know, he's not a great skater, he's a big guy, not the most physical, and he's not a difference maker. To me, he's a bit of a tweener. And you're not giving up too much to get a guy in Spezza who can be a difference maker. But maybe we underestimated the effect that he'd have on the roster at this point in time. Maybe we overestimated the effect he'd have. I think long term it'll be okay. But right now, there's a transition. I mean, you had a guy like Spezza, and from Dallas's perspective, you had a guy like Spezza, were you playing on the right wing, or are you playing on center with Sagan on the right wing for a while?
Yeah, he's got to play center.
Right, but you have Spezza back at center now on the second line. You thought Hemsky and him would work out. Hemsky can't score. Not that he's a scorer. He hasn't really done much. He's been a healthy scratch, as he mentioned. Some of the other guys in their roster don't necessarily fit in. Nikushkin's been injured.
I think they missed Nikushkin a lot. He had a good rookie year last year, and I think they were expecting more out of him in the second year.
I agree with that. I mean,
he's got all the talent in the world.
Yeah,
on one hand, you miss him because he's a dynamic player. On the other hand, he's 20 years old.
That's right.
So
yeah.
you got to replace those minutes. I'm not trying to contradict
but you're,
you.
But you're replacing those minutes yesterday with Curtis McKenzie and Eric Cole. Those are the wingers who flank Jason Spezza.
That's another issue, right?
Well, those guys just aren't good enough. They can't keep
Colton
up with
Savior
Jason Spezza.
Colton Savior was up on that top line.
Yeah.
There's a few things here. Kari Lehtinen struggling on that first. I mean, Adam Lowry, you know, great game, but
that's
on that first goal, I mean, he looked kind of awkward there.
And then short side from in close, it was ugly.
He's been bad, and he was one of the top goal, not the best goalie, but he played 55 plus games last year,
mm-hmm.
and Dallas has given up the most goals in the NHL.
Yeah, well,
you look at 100 goals, and it's unbelievable. We had our concerns at the beginning of the year, but we always assumed Dallas would be in 7th and 8th. I mean, you've got Tyler Seguin leading the NHL in goals.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Jamie Benn on that line.
Benn hasn't been that good, though, has he?
Yeah, he's struggled, but the point being, you have two of the best offensive players in the league, and then you throw in Jason Spezza, and it kind of looks like a top-heavy team, as Richie mentioned, that's struggling in their own zone, and Jason Demers hasn't really been the panacea, if you will, and you have a team right now that I watching that team yesterday, it just didn't look like a team that realized how badly they needed those 2 points.
You're right about that, Ezzy, because, you know, when that third period started, you know, the Jets obviously dominate that second period. They get the 3 unanswered goals in the second period to take a 5-2 lead. If the Dallas Stars cared to win that game,
mm-hmm.
they would have, you know, pushed back at the start of the third period. Now, I don't think that they were going to tie the Jets up.
That Frolik goal was a killer.
Right, it was. But you saw Dallas came out for the third period, and they had nothing. They didn't really come at the Jets in waves or anything, as a lot of teams do when they're down trailing by 3 goals. They were sort of prepared to play the third period, just get the 20 minutes over with, and chalk it up as a
mm-hmm.
loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's a team with a lot of problems there in Dallas.
Yeah, and I think you really saw it, well, Richie, with you know, Ryan Garbutt, a guy that, you know, a player I like, came up through the MJHL and all that, and he's taking bad penalties. He's taken a lot of penalties recently. He's kind of gone into Lindy Ruff's doghouse, whereas that line was kind of that solid third line, which I think it still can be, Richie, but it goes back to you got to have a strong defense in front of the goaltender, and I think there's a lot of problems there. A guy like Jamie Oleksiak, he's struggled. This is his first NHL year. It's his rookie year. But you know, it's a defense that leaves a lot to be desired.
But at the end of the day, we can talk all we want about Dallas's problems. They don't.
They're not long term problems.
When you look at it, it's harder to get a Benn and a Spezza, a Sagan than it is any other player. So the core winning team is there.
Yep, sure.
It's needing to augment that core, and that's not that easy sometimes. But it's easier than getting a Sagan. I mean, how else are you going to get a Sagan? A guy like that trade is very rare.
Of course.
Even a Jamie Benn, who's a late round pick and turned into a tremendous player, that doesn't happen easily. Now Lehtinen hasn't reached expectations. At least, well, certainly this year. In the past, he has at times, but maybe not for as long as you'd like. But maybe that's something to address. And obviously, the defense is something to address. But they don't have... I mean, Colorado as well, guys. We can talk all you want, but right now, they have problems. Sure. But how do you get a Nathan MacKinnon? How do you get a Matt Duchene?
You're right. Their problems are for this season. Because, you know, if this is a lost year for both those teams, and it seems like it very well is, at least for Dallas, you look, okay, you're giving John Klingberg time in the NHL to see if he can develop. You're giving Jamie Oleksiak more time. I mean, they have Julius Honka, who's going to be another year closer to being on that team, on the back end there. So the problems in Dallas are not problems that require an entire, you know, revamping of the roster. Well, they still have high-end talent that every team in the NHL kill for.
And I agree 100% with you, and I wouldn't expect major trades anyways. As Richie mentioned, they've already moved Brendan Dillon to San Jose for Jason Demers. They've already moved Sergei Gonchar to Montreal for Travis Moen. Because they weren't starting well and they wanted to shake up the roster.
Well,
I don't think
that's long term, though, Ezzy. A right-handed puck moving defenseman in Demers is hard to get.
I agree, but I think that the moves were made also because of the slow start. I don't know if, I mean, you could maybe speculate because Brendan Dillon had a contract issue, maybe Jim Nill was going to move him, but I don't think anybody expected a guy like Brendan Dillon to be moved after he signed. Point being that I think he's already made a couple of moves. I don't know if we should expect a major move. I think they got to get this going from within.
They traded, I mean, the part of the Brendan Dillon, Jason Demer trade is they were lefty heavy on the back end and needed a right-handed shot to some degree
It's not just, I mean, sure, the fact that he's right-handed is a plus, Drew, but it's the puck moving aspect.
Of course.
It's a skating puck moving guy. That's not
and
what Brendan
Dillon
is.
They gave up a draft pick.
Right. So Brendan Dillon's a good player guy. Yep. He can play on my team any day of the week. Yep. I don't have a team, but if I had a team, he could play on it.
Well, let's see if we can get you a team in the while we go to commercial. You know, maybe somebody's going to call you up and make you a general manager in the next three and a half minutes.
Yeah, right.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets-Avs game tomorrow night. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Nathan MacKinnon wasn't playing a lot in the second half of the third period because he wasn't playing. You weren't happy with the way he
did. I must have lost him in the rotation. I mean, I don't know what happened there.
Our own Ezzy Ginsberg talking to Colorado Avalanche head coach Patrick Waugh. I'm willing to bet he didn't lose him in the rotation. I think there might be something a little bit more, and Patrick was being a little bit kind to Mr. MacKinnon rather than calling him out.
I thought that was interesting, Drew, in this respect. If Nathan MacKinnon played in Winnipeg or any other Canadian city and Patrick Waugh was a coach, that would have been all over every paper.
Sure.
And you didn't even hear anything about it out of Denver. So to compare the pressures of playing in Anaheim, playing in Colorado, to playing in Canada, which, by the way, I think a lot of the players should welcome that pressure, but at the same time, I mean, you can see the contrast.
Sure.
You never heard anything about it. They benched the best player, to me, on that team for 12 minutes of the third period. He missed a 6-on-3, yep. a 5-on-3 before that, and a 5-on-4, and nobody talked about it. Really interesting.
I think you make a good point, Richie, because forget the fact that it's Patrick Waugh, arguably the best goaltender or one of the best goaltenders. It was the best young player, first overall pick, yep. best young player in the game right now being benched. And I think it has less to do with Patrick Waugh and, as you mentioned, the fact that it's Colorado. And they covered it a little bit in the Denver Post, but I agree with you. That would have been talked about for probably 12 hours on TSN 1050 if that was Nazem Kadri when he was a rookie.
The Colorado Avalanche and the Jets tomorrow in Denver. The Jets obviously destroyed the Avalanche 6-2 on Friday night at MTS Center. You know, is this a game where who's that gets the advantage there? Do the Jets have the advantage because they know that they can go in and they can wipe the floor with this team? We just did it 6 days ago. Or do the Avs have the advantage because we have to play these guys again and we just got embarrassed? We're going to show them we're not as bad as we were in that 6-2 game.
It's a bit of both, Drew. I think for the Jets, strategically, you're going to say, okay, Paul Maurice is going to say, well, I'm very comfortable with Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart. If I can get that matchup all the time and not always going to be able to get it on the road, I'm comfortable with that matchup because when I put Trouba up against MacKinnon's line, they got nothing. And when I put anybody else against that line, they got something.
Yeah.
quite a bit. So I think you're feeling comfortable with that. Then you're saying, okay, now I have Buffon and Sherratt, and I need to shut down Duchesne's line again. So I'm a little bit more concerned about that because if you do get that Duchesne line out with speed against the Postma pairing, you could have some issues, especially with Party there. But the way the Jets are playing and the focus being on getting in the offensive zone because Colorado cannot get the puck out of their own zone, you have to feel pretty confident. Now, from Colorado's perspective, you're saying, well, we didn't play well at all, but we were down 2-1 at the end of the second period. Maybe this team can't score on us. You know, if we can get a lead, we should feel comfortable because they're going to force something. We're so fast in transition, we're going to go the other way and get another goal. And if we get up 2 or 3 goals on this team, it's going to be tough for them to come back. I think that's the perspective that Colorado takes, amongst others. But that's how I think they're going to both go at it.
Jets are going to Semyon Varlamov out of the lineup for the Colorado Avalanche. He's been injured, really, for most of the year. He's still injured. He's out for a couple weeks now. Calvin Picard getting the start for the Avs tomorrow against the Jets. Obviously, local Winnipeg guy getting the start against his hometown team.
Yeah, his brother played in the NHL, too, Chet. You know, this is bad for the Colorado Avalanche, Rich, even though Varlamov hasn't been the goalie that he was last year. But, you know, you mentioned Nathan MacKinnon earlier, and we played the clip of Patrick Waugh talking about Nathan MacKinnon, kind of joking around that he lost him in the rotation. But he struggled this year, and we know he didn't score a goal till the 11th game of the season. But this Colorado Avalanche team, going back to last segment, is struggling defensively. And, you know, Pickard comes in, and you know, he had a couple of good games there, but Colorado, you know, just based on tomorrow's game and kind of trying to answer Drew's question about, you know, who has the advantage here. The Avalanche were shut out by the Predators yesterday.
3-0 on home ice.
On home ice. Shut out.
They're not very good.
Shut out. And so in the last two games, they've been outscored 9-2. They were embarrassed by Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Winnipeg really dominated them. Mm-hmm. And we all saw the game. And you have to think that, and you'd hope, and again, I'm not a mind reader. I can't see into the future. But this is a must-win game for them. And you can sit here and talk about, you know, is it impossible for these two teams to make the playoffs? Really, it doesn't really matter if it's impossible. The reality is, they have to win these games, or it's just going to be a question of mathematics, really. Because, you can put together 5 or 6 wins in a row, and maybe some of these teams lose, but really it just comes down to you're not going to have enough time to make up these points. You just don't have enough time. 30 games into the season, down 10 points. So I would expect a very, very desperate and hungry Colorado Avalanche team. And Winnipeg, we've seen they're not intimidated by these teams anymore. I think the Jets have shown still that they're not quite at the same level as the Blues, the Hawks, and the Kings. I think those are the three best teams in the Western Conference, in my opinion. You throw in the Ducks too, sure, but especially those two teams within their own division. I think those are the only two teams that the Jets this year haven't shown that they can really handle easily. I mean, sure, you beat Chicago, but I think we'll give Michael Hutchinson the big steal there. So, I mean, the Avalanche, again, you got to tighten up, and you'd have to think that those guys in that dressing room right now are saying, come on, guys. I mean, we're running out of time here. We're 30 games into the season. The Avalanche have the third worst goal differential in the entire Western Conference. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Well, is it? If you look at the defenses of these teams, like look at the Colorado defense. Nate Gannon's in the top four. I know Brad Stewart's hurt.
And Nate Gannon, go ahead.
In the top four.
Nobody heard of Carl Stollery until he played here last Friday.
And everybody's heard of Zach Redmond. He's getting a regular shift. Jets didn't think he was good enough to make this squad.
Yeah, and it's not like the Jets' defense was anything to write home about while Zach Redmond was here. And he couldn't get a regular shift in Winnipeg either.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you about the Jets goaltending tomorrow night. I know that it's been the rotation, Pavlik, Hutchinson. It would be Pavlik's turn. You know, Hutchinson played against the Avs 6 days ago, handled them easily with the 6-2 victory.
He's not going to want to go near controversy, Drew. He's going to play Pavlik, and he's going to stick with this rotation and make sure that there's no articles or talk about it or worry in the dressing room about it. That's what I think he's going to do. Right now, if they keep winning or playing close games, he's not going to have to worry about all that pressure. He eventually might flow even more games to Hutchinson as it goes, but he'd like for it to be a little bit more organic that way.
He is Jets head coach Paul Maurice, of course.
And you talk about who's going to play next, and I agree with you, Richie. I think it will be Pavlik tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But how long can you go with this rotation? And I guess the answer to that, based on what you were saying, Richie, is until they start losing or we start to see a goalie falter. But I've said this all along. I mean, I think Michael Hutchinson's been the better goalie. I'm not saying that Michael Hutchinson should get the majority of the starts. But if you look at since the game in L.A., he hasn't let in more than 2 goals in a game.
Well, I think on merit, he should be playing more. But that's not always the way it works.
Sometimes you don't want to rock the boat and you let Merritt, you know. You don't really have to worry about Merritt probably until you're really into the crunch time of the season.
Aside from the back-to-back, with the Minnesota game back-to-back there, I thought he should have played Hutchinson and not played Pavlik both.
He had to come in anyways.
Exactly. He being Paul Maurice, I think he's handled it, and that's nitpicking. I think he's handled the goaltending situation very well. Again, he's not going to give the media anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it plays into that too. You know, as much as the players and all the like to avoid the press and say they don't listen to the radio, watch TV, they do. And controversy, if you get controversy, you breed some doubt into the players' minds the way he's handling it right now. And he's not isolating a player. Remember, Pavlik's buddies with Frolik, he's buddies with a lot of the players. You don't want a guy feeling like he's being left out. The way he's done it now, it's pretty masterful, I have to say, so far. Now, when you get down later in the season, you play better teams, mm-hmm. and the games mean more. It'll be interesting to see, because I think then he'll go with the guy he thinks the best chance to win regardless. Right now, while he still wants to win every game, he's got a little bit more of a big picture mentality as it relates to the season.
And we should mention, this is a good problem to have for a few reasons. The one reason I think maybe that wouldn't have been an option at the beginning of the season is, and it was for a short period of time, is that you don't want to have a situation where you don't feel confident in playing your second goalie. And that's what we saw when Pavlik started. I think it was 7 straight games, and then he went with Hutchinson eventually.
Yeah.
So Carolina. Now you have two strong goalies, two goalies playing really well. And so if you want to rotate them now, and it's working, then I think we're going to see Maurice keep doing that.
You know, when your team is 6-2-2 in their last 10 games and they've got points in their last 7, everything's hunky-dory, and that's where the Jets are right now.
So why would you want to change that?
Very good point. Let's go to break. When we come back, Drew Spivak, ESPNDenver.com, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from ESPNDenver.com, Drew Spivak. Drew, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me back on again.
Our pleasure, of course, Drew. Brought you on, obviously, to talk about tomorrow night's Jets-Avs game. 6 nights after the Jets really laid a good licking on the Avs back here in Winnipeg. You know, was there an embarrassment factor in the Avs dressing room after losing so handily and in such a dominating fashion last Friday?
You know, I think there was. I think that the team kind of looked at that as kind of a wake-up call, or at least hopefully you would think they looked at it as a wake-up call. And that, you know, it was one of those games where just nothing went right for them. You know, they're kind of hanging around in there at the beginning of the game, and then it kind of seemed like almost after the goal that got scored when Varlamov made the glove save and it ended up getting overturned into a goal, it kind of seemed like things just kind of rolled out the Avalanche at that point and things got bad. And then, you know, the team decided to have a players-only meeting where a lot of the captains got up and spoke, and a couple of the other guys that are not captains, like Alex Tanguy and Matt Duchene, guys like that, got up and kind of spoke to the team, just saying, "Hey, guys, you know what? We need to get this thing together, because they're running out of time at this point to try and turn this thing around." And it, you know, I think a lot of the fans looked at that game against Winnipeg and said, "You know what? If this isn't going to be what wakes the team up, then nothing at this point will."
Drew, I know Joe Sakic came out earlier this week and said that no moves are coming and this is the group that we have and we got to turn this around ourselves. Do you buy that, and do you think this team maybe does have to make a move?
Well, as far as if I buy it or not, I mean, you almost don't have a choice. You don't really hear them as far as the rumors go, as far as making moves and things like that. But, I mean, I don't think there's any question at this point that this team needs a shakeup, because this lineup is currently constructed is not getting the job done. And it's crazy to kind of think back and go, and when you look back at how good they were last year, it's not that different of a lineup. I mean, as far as the top six goes, yeah, you're missing Paul Stastny and P.A. Parenteau, guys like that, but you've added some veteran leadership with Danny Briere and Jerome McGinley, guys like that. But, you know, just whatever it is for this team, it's just not going right. And I know a lot of people kind of maybe think it's an injury issue with this team, but if you look at the way that the lineup is set every night, the top six in this lineup are healthy. They're all playing together every single night, and they're not getting the job done at the end of the day. And, you know, everybody points to the defense and talks about how bad they've been, and, you know, that's obviously the truth. But the biggest issue I think that this team has is, you know, in order to go out and get the pieces that they need in order to get better, they're going to have to give up a lot in return, and I'm just not sure that Sakic and Wall want to do it at this point. They might wait around and see kind of who becomes available close to the trade deadline, but I don't think there's any question this team needs a shakeup of some sort.
Drew, were you surprised, considering that apparently Gabriel Landeskog and had a players-only meeting after the game against Winnipeg? I'm not sure if it was Sunday or Monday. Were you surprised at that effort, losing 3-0 to Nashville, considering they had that players-only meeting and they knew what was on the line?
I was, yeah, because, you know, this was a big game, and the Avalanche are in a really important stretch right now where, you know, if they're somehow going to get back into this playoff race, you've got a lot of games against Central Division teams, and, you know, you started off coming back home and playing the Nashville team that, you know, they're coming off a loss, but they're playing some pretty good hockey recently, and, you know, they're up at the top of that division, and to come out and lay an egg, to completely lay an egg like that at home like they did last night. I mean, there was no atmosphere inside that Pepsi Center whatsoever. I mean, I think a part of it had to do with the crowd. They announced that there was 12,000 people there, but there was nowhere near as close to that. There was maybe only 9,000-10,000 tops there. So I think there was a lot of energy that was lacking from the building last night, and the team kind of played like it. They were flat all night. They got very few scoring chances. The few scoring chances they did get, they hit the post a couple times. They shot a couple great scoring chances wide, and they were just never really a threat in that game last night. And it's a shame because they wasted a great effort from goaltender Calvin Pickard, who came up and played a great game for them last night.
Drew, aside from Nathan MacKinnon and Matt Duchene, are the Avs too slow up front?
I don't know if they're too slow. I think the biggest thing with these guys is there's no chemistry that's developed between these guys in the top six at all. You know, you look at Nathan MacKinnon and the year that he had last year, and he's coming out this year and he's been moved back to center. And it almost seems at times that he's trying to do too many things. Instead of making the smart play, he's trying to make the big play. And it almost seems like right now the game's too fast for him. So I think that's been a big issue. But as far as like speed goes up front, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, I think kind of you could maybe point to Jerome McGinley as being a guy that maybe is slowing the team down a little bit. But, you know, he hasn't really – I don't think he's really hurt the team at all as far as his lack of speed goes or anything like that. Because you look at – you know, compared to what they had last year, they have just as much speed up front as they did last year. It just seems like they're playing the game differently, and, you know, unfortunately they're spending way too much time in their own defensive zone, and I think that's what's causing the biggest problems as far as the scoring chances go.
And you mentioned the problems in the defensive zone, and, you know, one thing, when the Avs were in town here in Winnipeg last week, you look at the roster up front, you mentioned that top six, and getting the puck to those guys is imperative in terms of the team's success. Are the Avs going to be able to get the puck out of their own zone without bringing in somebody else to play on the back end, if not two players?
You kind of worry about that, and especially when you play those teams, you know, like you guys have up there in Winnipeg, you play those bigger, more physical teams, and teams that like to forecheck a lot, they have a big-time issue with that. And, you know, the sad and scary part about it is that over the last month, they've actually gotten better at it. I mean, they got out to such a bad start defensively that I guess you could say that they could only get better from it. But, you know, ever since they kind of switched to more of a zone type style, they've definitely improved on getting that puck out of the zone. But it's definitely imperative because you've got so many guys that are playmakers on this team and threats to get down the ice. But not having that ability to get the puck out of the zone and get it through the neutral zone quick enough is really killing these guys.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com talking about the Avs ahead of tomorrow night's Jets-Colorado game. Drew, we talk about the problems on the back end, and yet, you know, you look at the roster there of defensemen, it's certainly not a who's who of NHL players, yet they have Nick Holden, who people might have an idea of. They have him playing left wing on the fourth line. You know, why are they playing a defenseman up as a forward when they have so many problems on the back end? Is that really helping anything?
You know, not really. I think the biggest issue with it is Nick Holden, when he's been playing on the defensive side this year, he's been so bad. I think he's sitting right now at a minus 15, somewhere in that range, and he's been really bad defensively. And it was a big surprise to everybody because he was so good last year towards the end of the season, into the playoffs. He was one of their top two or three defensemen last year, and then coming out this year, he's been just an absolute liability up there. So I think Patrick Waugh looked at it and said, all right, well, we're gonna move him up and have him play forward. And I think part of it was due to the fact that this Avalanche team right now is so injury-riddled at the forward position, especially in that bottom six, that they kind of did it out of necessity a little bit. But, you know, they moved him back and had him playing defense last night, even though the Avalanche went and called up a sixth defenseman in Carl Stollery and had him playing back there a little bit. So it's just there's not a lot of cohesion right now going between both Patrick Waugh and Nick Holden and kind of that defensive core as a whole. But Nick Holden is definitely a guy that has to step his game up because he's got the potential. He's got some ability. He's young. He's usually, at least last year, he was a decent puck-moving defenseman. But this year, he's been the complete opposite and been a complete liability.
Drew, we were talking earlier in the show, you know, Patrick Waugh benched Nathan MacKinnon the third period of the Winnipeg game, and he, you know, he sat in the middle of the bench, and, you know, Patrick Waugh said after the game to Ezzy over here that, you know, he lost him in the rotation. How much was made of that benching, and how long do you think Waugh was waiting to do that?
You know, not much was really made of the benching out here. I mean, I think everybody kind of just took it with a grain of salt and said, you know what, maybe he wanted to play some of these guys that were going to grind a little bit harder and you know, give a better effort to some of those, you know, bottom line, third and fourth line type guys. But, I think Patrick Waugh's been wanting to do it for a while because Nathan MacKinnon has been really inconsistent this year. And I think the unfortunate thing is when you look at him and how good he was last year, it's hard to remember that the kid's only 19 years old. He's only in his second pro season playing in the NHL now. But, you know, it's definitely been a struggle for him this year. And I don't think that the transition moving from the wing to play in the center position has done him any favors. I think it's really hurt his game a lot this year because, you know, he was so successful playing on that right side, being a goal scorer for this team last year, and now it's like he's just trying to be too much of a playmaker. I think Waugh needs to send that message. I think at the end of the day, they're going to have to find a way to move him back to the right wing and if they want to have him be the type of player that he can be.
I know, Drew, there's been a lot of, I guess, unfortunate, especially the way the Avalanche have played. There's a lot of negatives coming out of Denver, but one of the positives we got to ask you about is former Winnipeg Jet Zach Redmond, who's got into 17 games. He's got himself 8 points, and a lot of Jets fans are wondering maybe why the Jets didn't keep Zach Redmond, but more so, he's been a nice surprise for the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, Zach Redmond's been great this year. I know at the beginning of the season, a lot of Avalanche fans and us media types, we were clamoring to get this guy in the lineup because we saw in training camp and in the preseason that this kid can play a little bit. He's got really good speed. He moves the puck well. He's a pretty good guy back there defensively. He does a lot of nice things, taking his man, and he's been a big acquisition for this team. And seeing that and seeing him be so successful has been kind of a fun thing to watch because we all know that, you know, kind of the things he went through in Winnipeg and things like that. And to see him come out this year and be the success that he has been real nice, especially the scoring threat. He's a guy that's fun to watch when he gets the puck. Yet he doesn't have any fear with it. He jumps up into the play and can make some big things happen. So it's definitely been good to watch Zach Redmond come in and be one of the few bright spots in that defensive core this year.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com. He joins us from the Mile High City. Drew, thanks very much for doing this. Enjoy tomorrow evening's game.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me, and good luck to you guys going forward. The Jets are a fun team to watch this year. Hopefully they can keep it going.
Well, here's hoping. Thanks very much, Drew.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Ottawa Senators' dismissal of Paul McClain, and we have a big comedy announcement courtesy of our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You fellas been doing a bit of boozing, have you? Sucking back on Grandpa's old cough medicine?
No. Oh, no, sir.
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah, well, what's that?
That's nothing, sir.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, well, you aware that it's against the law to have an open alcohol container here in the state of Pennsylvania? Come on, give me that booze, you little pumpkin pie haircutted freak. Come on.
Sir, no, wait.
No, sir, don't drink.
You'd keep your mouth shut if you knew it was good for you, buddy.
That, of course, is Harland Williams. And our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club are pleased to announce that Harland Williams will be at Rumors March 5th to March 7th of 2015. Tickets go on sale this coming Friday at 3 p.m. So if you're looking maybe for a Christmas gift for somebody in your family, a holiday gift, maybe if you're a big Harland Williams fan yourself, you know him from Dumb and Dumber, Something About Mary, Half-Baked, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, tickets on sale on Friday for Harland Williams, March 5th through March 7th.
Yeah, we're going to be at that one.
Oh, yeah.
We went to Rob Schneider a couple years ago. And it was lots of fun.
Yeah.
And we got to go check out Harland Williams. He's been doing stand-up for a long time, and that'll be a good one.
Absolutely. That will be a good one. It was not a very good week for Ottawa Senators' former head coach, Paul McClain, as he was dismissed from his position as the head man in Ottawa to be replaced by Dave Cameron, not as the interim head coach, but as the full-time head coach. How surprised were you that the Senators made this move regarding Paul McClain? We'd heard rumblings, you know, maybe towards the end of last year, that the rope might have been a little bit short. How surprised were you at the timing and that this move happened at all?
Only surprised, Drew, because they came back from the 3-0 deficit against Vancouver on Sunday night and won there. Not shocked. Again, we heard, I thought without merit, the rumors of this being a possibility for some time now, and finally Brian Murray pulled the trigger there. I wonder if Brian Murray is the sole decision maker in this move here, because Dave Cameron, coach for Eugene Melnyk, the owner's CHL team in the OHL specifically in the past, and there's
the majors.
There's chatter that he had been promised a job years ago. So was this only a matter of time? I think the bigger issue here is the Ottawa Senators brain trust thinks that this team is better than it is. And you look at the forwards in this roster, and the defense should be better. I agree with that. And the goaltending has certainly been very good more often than not lately. But this team's just not good enough. So I don't know what the expectation level was for where they are. Maybe a little better defensively. But is a coaching change going to change that? It may. It's not going to change the fortunes of this team going forward, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the big picture.
Ezzy, before I get you to chime in, here's Brian Murray talking about the reason to dismiss Paul McLean.
Well, I'm not sure why he came up short, but we came up short. We're sitting 7th out of 8 in our division. We can continually be a big turnover team in our own zone. Our goaltending has been, to say the least, outstanding most nights to give us a chance to win hockey games. The chances against our team are some nights atrocious.
Ezzy, what do you think? You know, are the expectations unreasonable for this Ottawa Senators team?
Yeah, I agree with Richie on that point. And you look at it, and you know, the Senators here, they haven't been playing well. They're only 3 points out of a playoff spot, and that shows you how terrible the Eastern Conference
that's exactly
is.
I can't remember
a conference being this bad. I mean, I'll be shocked if the Western Conference team doesn't win the Stanley Cup. I mean, I think there's some good teams there, but I think there's maybe 3 or 4 teams, I'd say, and they're all at the top: Pittsburgh, Detroit, Tampa, and the Islanders. But you know, this team is by no means out of a playoff spot. I don't know how much damage they do against a team like the Penguins or a team like the Islanders or whatever in the playoffs, but you know, this is a team, it's very young, but it's a team that's played pretty well defensively, and they've got 2 good goalies, and sure, they've got one of the youngest D-cores, Richie, but you look at some of the players.
They've been good at preventing goals. They've not played well defensively, I don't think, Jesse. I mean, they give away way too many chances, way too many shots against. And it's because they have a young defense, but their goaltending covers it up a lot of the time.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I think that, you know, you talk about they've been coughing the puck up a lot, but I think that it's not just, you can't just look at goals against in the situation. I think you have a team that really has a leadership void, and you know, Ken Warren in the Ottawa Citizen wrote about this. Eric Karlsson and Paul McLean were arguing quite a bit over the last few weeks. Karlsson, that is, wanting to take on a little bit more of an offensive role. And, you know, I think Erik Karlsson, even though he's probably one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL, I think he still has room to grow. I don't think he's your prototypical shutdown defenseman.
Yeah, he's not.
And I think that, you know, this team right now doesn't really have a first line. I don't think Kyle Turris is a first-line center on most teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and back to what Richie said, I think, you know, Ottawa was, to me, a team that was going to be around 9, 10, 11, something like that. And that's exactly where they are. They're in 11th, fighting with the likes of, you know, the Rangers and the Panthers for that last playoff spot currently held by the Capitals. But Paul McLean, guys, was a coach of the year 2 years ago. And, you know, you've lost Alfredsson, you've lost Spezza, you've made some moves. You know, we talked about, you know, the trade bringing Chase on over and other players. I didn't think he was the problem. And obviously they made the decision because it was really, to me, Erik Karlsson or McLean.
A lot of people didn't disagree with the decision, including this lady.
My daughter Erin said to me today that something about the players play, and I'm going to shake it off. And move forward. Any questions? That is not my daughter.
It's good to see he could keep his humor, keep his sense of humor. That was a sort of bizarre point in yesterday's in the press conference that Paul McLean held.
Give him credit for holding a press conference, answering the questions right after he was fired. I mean, usually those guys don't talk to the press, and he gets up there and he's firing, and that shows a confidence in his ways. Maybe he's a little bit stubborn, and I don't think that's necessarily a negative attribute in this case. You know, Paul McLean's been around a long time. Obviously played about 10 years here in Winnipeg, so Jets fans there was a team here before, apparently. You would never know. Jets fans would, older fans would remember him, of course, from those years, and Howard Chuck and those guys, and went to the UHL, coached in Anaheim, coached in Detroit, coached in Ottawa. He's been around, so he paid his dues to get to where he was. You know, he knows a lot about the game, and the roster he was given wasn't a great roster. I mean, how many top ends got skill guys they have up front? Bobby Ryan, top end, like difference makers. Bobby Ryan, and is he a hard guy to play against? Is he a guy that you want to tie your fortunes to?
That was why re-signing him this summer was sort of such a bizarre move.
Well, it wasn't bizarre re-signing him. It was bizarre re-signing him at the money they re-signed him at.
Well, of course.
But, I mean, what else do you do? You lose Spezza. You're going to lose Spezza.
You tank the season.
Healy wants out. You can't keep losing assets for nothing. That's the reason they're in this place. Lose Chara for nothing. Wow. You know, basically lose Spezza for nothing. Lose Alfredson for nothing. They've lost. This is why they're here. They've went through a ton of talented players. In their prime, sure, they didn't get enough. They didn't have it. They didn't get it done when it mattered most. A lot of guys who just didn't get it done. Their goaltending was bad. But they've had so many players leave town for nothing. Havlat, what'd they get for Havlat? Hossa turned into Heatley. Heatley turned into Mihalik. He's been a good player. But Hossa's a Hall of Famer. Okay? Heatley's not now. Spezza, Chiasson, Chara, nothing. Redden, big money, nothing. You keep turning huge, valuable assets into nothing. That is why you are where you are right now.
Is there a culture problem in Ottawa? Because it seems like there's no... I mean, I can't think of another team in the NHL that has had many guys, you know, asked to be traded and try and get out of town as the Ottawa Senators have had.
I also think that that's the players, too.
Well, sure. It's definitely the players, but I mean, it seems
like a lot
of guys...
The character of the players there. I mean,
Daniel Alfredson never asked for a trade.
That's right. The character of the players there. Yeah, maybe they do have a culture problem if a guy like that wants to leave, but I think he wants to leave because he wants to win more than the culture issue.
I think there's ownership issues in Ottawa.
I agree with that. I mean, Drew, Eugene Melnyk is not exactly the most stable owner in terms of, you know, staying the course. He's kind of like Dan Snyder that way.
Yeah. A much lighter version of Dan Snyder.
Are you talking about Ed Snyder?
No, Dan Snyder, the Washington Redskins. Owner.
I thought you were talking hockey here.
Yeah, I know. But Ed Snyder is, I guess, you could say something about Ed Snyder not being the most patient stay-the-course owner either.
Okay, so it wasn't
they
that
win,
ridiculous.
Though.
Yeah, they win,
yeah,
though. That's
true.
Point.
They've won some Stanley Cups. Back to what Richie was talking about here, though.
Quickly, we got to...
Yeah, I mean, the Ottawa Senators could still make the playoffs here. They really can, because the Eastern Conference, I mean, it's unbelievably bad.
You know what I mean, bad? Forget just the Eastern Conference. You watch hockey these days. It's not NHL's finest season. Now they're talking about possibly adding another team. I mean, are you going to do this to the fans here? Honestly. Are you going to do it to the fans?
Do you think that they care about the
fans? No, I'm just... it's more rhetorical, Drew. Like, come on.
Well, I think you have to factor something in here as well, Richie.
You watching these games?
You have to factor in the KHL and the amount of players that over the years, I'm serious, have gone to the KHL, and there aren't a lot of Russian players, and... You obviously have European players in other leagues, but I think that you have not a serious threat to the NHL as far as the quality, the best players in the NHL, but I think that has something to do with it, and I agree with you. You talk about one, maybe even two teams added to this. You wonder how quality the product will be.
If you'd name me, tell me 10 good teams, we'll have an argument if you try and add an 11th in there. We'll have a serious argument.
Well, maybe that's something we can do on Saturday's show. Let's go to break. When we come back, Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play guy on TSN 1200 Radio in Ottawa, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play man on TSN 1200 Radio in Ottawa, Dean Brown. Dean, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem, boys.
Dean obviously brought you on to talk about the Senators' decision to remove Paul McLean as head coach and hire Dave Cameron in his place. Are you surprised at the timing of the move to dismiss Paul McLean?
No, not really. I think all of us who were around the team knew something was going to happen. Either there was going to be a trade or coach is going to get fired or something. You can just feel those things, and you know, it's a performance-based business. You don't win enough, you move on. So I don't think I certainly wasn't surprised, and I don't think really anybody who follows the team closely was surprised at all.
Dean, I know that we've been told that Dave Cameron's being not hired on an interim basis. He is the head coach of this team, but I guess first impression, do you think he's here long-term or short-term as the head coach?
Well, I don't know. He'll have to win games. He's never been a head coach in the NHL, so there's no track record to look at. You know, he coached the Canadian national team of the World Juniors, and he's been a coach in junior hockey successfully and in the AHL successfully. So, you know, he's been around, so but it's his first time as a head coach. So, you know, I suppose he'll be you know, evaluated the same as any head coach in this league. You know, how much do you win, and how long do you have to win those games? So he'll be around as long as this team is winning. And if they aren't winning, he, like every other coach, will eventually get fired too.
You know, winning obviously is an issue, and you look at the past coaches, Dean and Paddock and Hartsburg and Clouston and now McLean, all former coaches since Brian Murray left behind the bench when taking the Sens to the finals in 07. That many coaches, obviously, winning is an issue. But why have there been so many coaching changes?
Well, I think it's, you know, the product of being in a Canadian marketplace. You know, the pressure to win is so intense, and the patience for not winning is so short. You know, why is Claude Noel no longer the coach of the Winnipeg Jets? They didn't win enough games. It's, you know, I think sometimes we want to overthink these things. You know, in today's day and age, especially with the way waiver systems work and the way contracts work, you know, more than ever before, you can't punish players for lack of performance. You can't send them down without clearing waivers. You can't, you know, it used to be back in the 50s, you weren't happy with the guy, just send him to the minors, bring up another guy. Well, you know, those things. So really the things you can do to your players to try and spur a different result are far fewer. So when you have to shake up your team the way it's often done now, and it's not new, is with the coach. And so in a Canadian market, I think you're just under the microscope more often and for longer. And when you don't win, you know, the patience gets slim faster than it does in other places.
You know, Dave Cameron is a guy who's coached for a Eugene Melnyk-owned team. Do you think this decision is partly influenced by Melnyk?
Can never be sure. You know, like, I'm not on the phone with him, so I'm not sure. We are told no, but, you know, I can't. The only guys who know that are Eugene Melnyk and Brian Murray, I suppose. So I couldn't tell you with any empirical certainty. As I said before, you know, we've all, that question was asked here, and the answer was no, that Mr. Melnyk was actually informed after the decision had been made, and he has to give final approval for things. But from what we were told, it's not like he called down and said, hey, you got to pick Dave, you know. So I guess you have to take them at their word. And for me, you know, in my case, Brian Murray has never lied to me, so I would trust anything he told me, because he's just not that kind of guy to lie. So my answer would be no.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dean Brown. Dean is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster on our sister station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Dean, you look at the Senators roster right now, and you look at where they are in the standings, and, you know, disappointing given their place in the division, you know, 11-11-5 so far. Should the Senators, given this roster, be much better than they currently are?
Well, I suppose, really, if you look at the way they've played, they should be worse, to be honest with you, because the only reason they have the record that they have right now is Vezina-level goaltending. The goaltending from both Anderson and the young Swedish goaltender, you know, Robin Lehner, this year has been outstanding. And as I said, I'm not exaggerating, it's been Vezina-level goaltending. So really the big question you have to ask yourself is, you know, where this team would be if it didn't have that kind of goaltending, you know. And that's really why, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, Paul McLean got them to the playoffs twice, and they're a 500 team. What's the big deal? Well, everything is trending in the wrong way. Everything is swirling the wrong way. They're losing games. They're getting further out of reach of a playoff spot. And they're basically just keeping their heads around 500 because of miraculous goaltending. So something had to give. This team has just spent way, way too much time in its own end. Last year, they were 29th in the league in shots against per game. And this year, their shots against per game is 29th in the league. You know, but under Paul McLean, this group of players has been unable to learn how to play defensive hockey. And everyone's always been told, we've all been told in the world of hockey, that you can't teach offense, but defense is basically system decisions and hard work. And it's supposed to be the part of the game that is completely teachable. Well, this group, Paul McLean was unable to teach this group of players how to play defense for two straight years. So something's going to happen, and it did happen this week.
Dean, we wanted to move away, I guess, from on ice for a second here and talk about you know, some arena news that came out from the Ottawa Citizen saying that maybe there's a chance that Ottawa is looking at moving the team downtown. I guess for the listeners who are completely unaware of this, can you maybe share what you know about that?
Well, framing it as the Ottawa Senators, you know, might choose to move downtown is the wrong way to frame it. Here in Ottawa, there's obviously various levels of government. One of them is called the NCC, the National Capital Commission. The land in question that will be up for bidding for its use. You never own this land. You're only allowed to build on top of it because it's owned by this division of the government, the NCC. The National Capital Commission in Ottawa is responsible for certain amounts of land that go to the greater good of the country. And so all the beautiful parks that you see on postcards and stuff, those are all, that's all NCC property. So there is a possibility that the NCC will open up some land that they have owned for, I don't know, 100 years, 50 years, whatever it is, that's right across from the National War Museum, which would be, you know, downtown, and that the Senators are right now investigating whether they should put in a bid to try and be the group that develops that land with a hockey arena. But they would be, their bid would be one of several of many different uses. Somebody might put in a bid to build an aquarium or whatever. So If the NCC decides they're going to open up the land, and if the Ottawa Senators decide they're going to bid, and if they were to win that bid, then they might be able to build a downtown arena that may be able to house the team. So when people ask, you know, so they build a downtown arena, I say, well, there's about 15 ifs and about 65 really important buts before you ever get to putting a shovel in the ground. But technically, yes, the team has admitted that they are interested in investigating the possibility of putting in a bid, which they may not win.
So we can plan to drive to Kanata for a little while longer, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Even if this process were to go ahead at what the government calls lightning speed,
oh, yeah,
we're still talking 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, here in Ottawa, so many things that have to do with the government really is on Jamaica time. You know what I mean? Well, you know, we'll get to it when we get to it. You know, I moved, put it this way. I moved from Winnipeg, where I grew up. You know, I'm a Winnipeg boy. I grew up just outside of Winnipeg in Warren, Manitoba. I moved to Ottawa in 1983. So I'm now 30 plus years here. And when I got here 30 plus years ago, the NCC was taking applications for people who thought they might want to try and do something with NCC land. And so far, in 30 years, this piece of land they're talking about has never, ever been developed. And the NCC is basically run by a group of people that are appointed by the federal government. And the problem is that these people, as a group, are so paranoid and fearful of doing the wrong thing with government land that basically they never do anything. They're so paralyzed by fear that if they make the wrong decision and someone gives them crap for using public land improperly, that in 30 years, nothing has been built on this land. The land has been vacant right downtown Ottawa for over 30 years. So this idea that Ottawa might imminently have their hockey team move downtown, I have to tell you, I'll have to see it to believe it. And whether it's the hockey team or anything else they're going to build there, an aquarium, another museum, or whatever, I will believe it when I see it, because you have to understand, these people who run the NCC, they're a different group of people, and they don't get to many things quickly.
So, Dean, you're saying there's a better chance of moving back to Winnipeg before they build the new arena.
Yeah, that may, you know, my mom would like that a lot. But, yeah, that may be actually true. So I'm not seeing anybody running downtown to buy condos because they think that very shortly right. The value of the condos will rise because someone's going to build a rink right beside them. I'm not seeing anybody rushing downtown to do that and speculate on land, because everyone here in Ottawa knows what happens when the NCC talks about possibly opening up some possibilities for people to possibly bid to possibly use the land. You know, we've had 50 years of that with this piece of land.
Well, if you ever needed to shoot a cannon down a public street, Spark Street, you know, after 6 o'clock at night, you won't hit anybody there in Ottawa.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, the other laughable thing is, you know, here in Ottawa, people are on the talk shows today talking about, well, you know, it'd be great because, you know, have a whole bunch of new employment. Well, no, the jobs that would be lost in Kanata by moving the team would just be picked up there. There'd be no new jobs except building the thing. You know, it'd be a great building project. And the other thing, under current NCC rules about commercial development, everybody's talking about how great it would be to have the thing downtown. You could go out to dinner at a nice restaurant and walk to the rink. Well, under current NCC rules, you can't build that kind of retail space on NCC property, so there wouldn't be any restaurants around it. You'd, in the middle of February, you'd have a half an hour walk to the closest restaurant. Just because it's downtown doesn't mean it's near anything downtown. So it's like I say, there's going to have to, if all those things happen, there's going to be have to be some major changes to the way the NCC restricts things if you want it to be what everyone thinks it should be, which is this whole development with restaurants and maybe a casino and, you know, all these other urban things. It's going to require massive changes to the way the NCC uses its land, allows people to develop its land, and what they allow development on their land. And like I said, right now, you couldn't, under current NCC rules, if you were allowed by the NCC to build on one of their properties, first of all, you never own the land, you just lease it forever, you would not be able to build a restaurant on, because that's a for-profit retail business they don't approve of for government land, because it's not beautiful, you can't take a picture of it, and it's not good for every single member of the Canadian, you know, of the population. It'll put it this way. It will also require a major deviation from the current rules just to build a hockey rink, because a hockey rink has to be something of national significance and beauty. Well, a hockey rink is a hockey rink. Unless somebody at the NCC now thinks a rink is of national importance and beauty, a hockey rink doesn't qualify under their current statute. So, like I said, all these things could be changeable, and the senators have to, the lifespan of the building is 30 years. So the building is, what, 25 years old now? So they have to start planning. So I think as prudent businessmen, they are examining whether this downtown possibility is a real possibility, or should they put $50 million into the current rink and upgrade it. So as prudent businessmen, they're evaluating all the different possibilities. But the idea that the senators are close to moving downtown and the whole thing is imminent, we are 65 miles away from that yet.
Yeah, so, Dean, you've obviously made it pretty clear that we shouldn't expect a downtown arena anytime in the near future. We've got one more question for you here, and then we'll let you go, and we appreciate you coming on, as always. Wanted to ask you about Curtis Lazar. He struggled big time in his rookie season with the Ottawa Senators. Do you suspect that he's going to be released for the World Juniors?
No, because I would seriously contend that while certainly on paper when you look at him you see that he hasn't scored a goal yet, that implies that he is struggling, but he hasn't struggled. In the role they've got him in, they don't have him in a role by and large that's really an offensive role, and he has played exceptionally well for a 19-year-old. It hasn't included a whole lot of offense yet, but the idea that he hasn't played well because he hasn't scored isn't true. He's actually played really well, number one. Number two, because of that, they need him. They don't put him on the ice because they don't have other guys. They have other guys with more experience. He has just beat them out for the position, so the team needs him. He's not an add-on. He's not a guy they put on the ice because they have no one else to play. And the other thing is, to be honest with you, if it's up to him, you know, he'd be one of those kids that's put in an awkward spot, whereas a Canadian kid, he never wants to say that he doesn't want to play on the Canadian team of the World Juniors, because it is an honor. But I think, you know, almost all of those kids, if given their druthers, especially the ones that have already played at a World Juniors, they want to be in the NHL. That was the whole, you know, that was the whole point of playing high-level hockey all their lives, to one day live out their dream. And if they've already played in the World Juniors once, none of them want to, you know, poo-poo the program, but it's kind of been there, done that. And I would imagine if you put the lie detector on Curtis Lazar and asked him go to the World Juniors or stay in the NHL, his answer would be stay in the NHL. So I doubt seriously Curtis Lazar will be going to the World Juniors.
Dean Brown is the new chairman of the National Capital Commission in Ottawa.
Hey, if I was the chairman of the NCC, I'd have lawn chairs out for you guys to watch the construction next week.
We appreciate your time, Dean. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, boys.
All right, Dean Brown, he's the Ottawa Senators play-by-play guy on TSN 1200. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play man on TSN 1200, for joining us to talk about the Senators' decision to dismiss Paul McLean as head coach, and apparently to talk about the state of the National Capital Commission in Ottawa.
Yeah, as Dean Brown said, don't expect it to happen. There's also some talk of possibly making the current arena smaller. I mean, it's a little bit odd.
It is a big arena.
You lived it, and jokes aside, Drew, you did live there, and there is clamoring to move that arena downtown, isn't there?
It's fantastically inconvenient to get to that arena in Kanata. I mean, you're talking about an hour on the road from the time you would leave your office or leave your house to get into the arena. You're talking an hour. There's one road to get there. There's really one exit on the highway to get in there. It is remarkably inconvenient. So a downtown arena in Ottawa would be fantastic. whether or not it's going to happen is still a long ways off. And it's certainly not going to happen without a lot of, I think, money contributed by the different stages of government. Because Eugene Melnick, I mean, his money problems in Ottawa, I think, are relatively well known. The Senators have the second lowest salary in the entire NHL. So there is some financial difficulties there, and I don't see him building an arena without getting a lot of federal money involved in there.
I don't disagree with you, and if he's got to get investors in to be able to finance other things, which has been what he's been trying to do, apparently. His other holdings not doing as well as before fluctuates quite a bit, of course. I think you're probably very right about that, and if that's the case, then it'll take longer if it will happen at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to the NHL's Board of Governors meetings that took place earlier this week in West Palm Beach, Florida. Nice place for them to visit. I noticed they never stay anywhere north in the United States for those meetings. Darren Dreger talked about the Las Vegas situation. We'll hear from Dreger, and then we'll talk about it ourselves.
I mean, there is a relationship, and it's a considerable one in the sense that the Foley interest has been genuine and has been there for quite some time. And obviously not that long ago, Bill Daly was in Las Vegas for some level of conference, but he also took time to meet with the people there and then visit the facility that's in construction, and that kind of got things stirred up again in terms of expansion discussion. But hey, look, Gary Bettman did his best to make sure that he qualified all of, you know, the comments that he made here today following day one of the meetings, and made it abundantly clear that the Board of Governors did nothing more than support the request of Bill Foley to run a test drive, a season ticket drive in Las Vegas, first to see if there's enough interest for him to, you know, invest the hundreds of millions of dollars to even pursue this matter. So, you know, Bettman was pushed by all the reporters in that availability, you know, to qualify timelines and all of those things, and he would have none of it. He just said, look, all we did was green light the request for Bill Foley and his people to organize a season ticket test drive to see if the local market can support it.
Foregone conclusion at this point, no matter what this ticket test drive shows? I mean, do you see a way that this ticket test drive isn't already sort of...
What does it do, by the way, the test drive?
I don't know. It gets them some season ticket commitments.
Like, how much money are you putting up?
Who knows if you're even putting up any? I don't know. It seems to be the new thing the NHL does. They obviously did it here in Winnipeg.
And they did it here after the team's moving here.
Yeah.
Are they going to suddenly reject it and move it back to Atlanta?
Well, that was the question that was never answered, of course.
Because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, of course it wasn't going to happen. It was already bought. They already bought the team. It wasn't conditional. So, I mean,
what, this is like the Hamilton ticket drive?
Well, except they didn't have a team.
Jim Balsillie running it?
Yeah, but except the NHL wasn't on board with that one. So
no, I think Richie makes a good point, though. In essence, this is market research, is it not?
I mean, it's flawed market research, but it's better than nothing.
I don't think it's even market research. It's market commitment. It's
No, you're not committing anything.
Yeah, you're...
Well, I don't know. I mean, who knows when they actually unveil what this ticket drive is going
to
look like.
Well, you can't commit to something that doesn't exist. I mean, I think we're talking about here, you're gauging public interest. I would call it market research.
You can say that. I mean, you can make people buy on the... with the contingency that the team arrive. I mean, True North did it not that long ago when they tried to get the Davis Cup tennis here. I mean, there's parallels here. They did a ticket drive ahead of time and said, we want to show that we have a strong market for tennis, so we want 5,000 people to buy these tickets. And
we'll refund them if it doesn't come.
And we'll refund them if it doesn't happen. So I think it's similarly parallel to what they might be doing in
Davis.
Davis
Cup tickets versus a season ticket commitment
of
in the National Hockey League is not exactly the same
thing. The scale is way different.
But the point being here is that we're hearing more and more about it. The NHL, sure, Gary Bettman's saying all this is I'm allowing William Foley to have a season ticket drive in the sense that we'll, gauging public interest and all that. But
has Gary Bettman watched a game this year? This league cannot afford another team.
Especially if it's going to end up being two teams.
Well, I think they're looking at it, Richie. They can't afford not to, in the sense that they could get $400 million.
Well, that's the point. And it's all about money. That's the answer. Right. I mean, that's where the TV money goes. That's where everything goes, right? Money. And fine, that's the way it is. But you look at it, I don't understand this whole narrative about uneven conferences.
Has it ever... I don't think it's made a difference so far to anybody's mind.
It's just an excuse to move a team there as opposed to Quebec City. You couldn't move another team back to the West again. You did it for 20 years.
Well, that was
I love the way they changed their whatever the wind flies. Oh yeah, sure, we'll do that. Or this is the reason why. I mean, they're so transparent. Can we actually have another team? Move a team. Have you seen a game in Carolina? Nobody there. Phoenix? Florida's been struggling for attendance. We had Drew Spivak on earlier. 9,000 people in Colorado. We're going to add another team. The salary cap might not even move if the Canadian dollar takes a hit. I wonder why. Because all the money's in Canada.
Mm-hmm. It might only go up from $69 million to $73 million, Richie. I think you make good points. I think there's a few things here.
Never mind the fact that the hockey's atrocious.
That's something that I think is at the... probably at the back of the reasons not to do this. But I think Richie, you know, mentions Carolina, Florida, Phoenix. Three markets that I think have the option. I think you could see two of those three markets move. We know Peter Karmanos is possibly looking for another owner, possibly to sell the team entirely. So I think, you know, you talk about expansion. I think there's always the possibility that one of these teams moves. You might have the option of moving to either Seattle or Quebec City. But the reality is back
but
to
Seattle's
Los
Seattle's like forcing it. Square peg, round hole. I mean, right. No, they don't want a team.
There hasn't been a overwhelming clamoring.
And that's why Quebec City, I think, I threw that in there. I think that those are options.
But
I
then
think.
They're basically discounting it. At least to this point, they are. I just don't understand. I mean, it's following the money. Maybe it does work there. But again, if it does work there, why would you create a new team? Why would you? I know the money.
Well, and that's another East team.
Charge a relocation fee again. Take a couple $1 million less for the betterment of the league. These guys are all millionaires anyways.
They don't care about the betterment of the league. If they cared about the betterment of the league and the quality of the teams, they'd be talking about contracting teams, not expanding. I mean, can you imagine you put another 50 players into this league? Who are these guys that are coming in? You already have, you know, 10 teams. You know, sorry, this is your you know, routine here, but it's true. You already have 10 teams who are pretty much unwatchable on a night-by-night basis. You're going to add another 50 players?
You're just watering it down, and I don't understand it. And you already got locked in on these TV deals, right? I mean...
Sure, there's no more... that's why they want it, because the only additional revenue they're getting is via expansion from the ownership
group. What are the TV numbers in Las Vegas, in Quebec City, Seattle? I mean, they're not going to be huge. You're not talking about a big metropolitan here. I mean, no. Vegas is big, but you're not talking about huge ratings.
No, I think it's somewhere, Richie, around the 42nd biggest market or something like that. So you're not talking about a Chicago or New York, obviously. So yeah, I think looking at this, you think if they're hell-bent on going to Las Vegas, it would make more sense to relocate a struggling franchise as opposed to expansion. And I think everybody thinks there's going to be expansion. I find it hard to believe that there's going to be 32 teams in the NHL, especially when you have... We have stable ownership.
There will be 32 teams in this league before there's a new arena in Ottawa.
Ugh.
Most likely, Drew, but... I think it could be dangerous territory when you start expanding the NHL when you already have teams that are losing money.
All I know is I watched the past six games of the Jets, seven games of the Jets, and I had to watch Buffalo's defense, Edmonton's defense, Colorado's defense, Dallas. Like, come on. I mean, do us all a favor. Move a team.
Well, they're not going to. There's $1 billion. If you can charge $500 million in expansion fees.
How much is that per team, by the way?
Well, it's, you know, divided. I mean, it's, you know, just, you know, a little bit under $20 million a team.
How much is that to these guys? I'm asking that. Like, seriously, is it that much to each owner? Yeah, sure. Don't get me wrong, Drew. They would rather have it than not. But they don't rely on it. None of these guys, it's a secondary business to them, and they're just doing it for fun.
Right.
And they're going to make that decision? I mean, I think it's Gary Bettman wants to beat and the NBA there. He wants to be the first to do something. And because of the incompetence of some other commissioners, he's suddenly been looked at in the light of being successful. When in reality, I don't think there's anything that great about his tenure.
No, I mean, his tenure is... Yeah, certainly his tenure has been spotty at best over the years in the NBA, and he looks, or in the NHL, and he looks better right now because he's not Roger Goodell, who
That's
is.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah. I mean, he wants to get to the Vegas and try and be on the, you know, ahead of the curve in that respect. If you're going to go there and take that chance, I don't have an issue with going there and taking the chance. But don't go there with a new team. Take one of these teams that's not working, admit a mistake like you did in Atlanta, and move on.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some teams that have been healthy scratching players and if they might be on the trade market. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
This segment of NHL Midweek is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, a number of notable, or somewhat notable at least, NHL players have been healthy scratches as of late. Thought we might get some of the trade rumors burning up, seeing if there's any market for either any of these players that I'm about to mention. Let's start in Buffalo, where Chris Stewart was a healthy scratch the other night. He really didn't want to talk about it with the assembled media, so much so that he had his change of clothes brought into the room that's off limits to the media via a shopping cart. Is there a market for Chris Stewart in the NHL, you think?
Yeah.
Shopping cart.
Apparently, yeah. There is a market for Chris Stewart, and I can understand there being a market, although apparently it's a bigger market than I would have anticipated based on the rumors, which I don't know why they're rumors anymore because nobody makes trades. you know, Drew, if you have a guy like that, obviously he's got 4 points in 27 games. You're going to say, well, why is there a market for him? Well, just as recently as 2012-13, the guy put up 36 points in 48 games. And if you're 6'2", you're 230 pounds, and you can skate, and you have pretty good puck skills, and you can be physical, there's going to be a market for you. Buffalo's been trying to sell high on this guy since they acquired him, really. And that's Tim Murray's job. He knows he's in a rebuilding process. He wants to add draft picks. He wants to add some young talent. And, you know, if he really thought this guy was the real deal, he might want to re-up him here. But that's... He's not long-term answer. He's going to be somebody's trade deadline acquisition, and I think he can be effective in the right role, but I wouldn't sell the farm for him.
Yeah, Chris Stewart was a healthy scratch, by the way, recently. And
that's why
you
we're talking about it.
Well, I'm...
Tom, that's the name of the segment.
Well, it's not just healthy scratches. It's players that could be traded.
No, they're all healthy scratches.
Okay, well...
It says it right in the show plan.
I didn't read the show plan.
Well, first problem.
The title of the segment... Healthy scratches trade candidate.
Well, not only that, but then he came into the... He not only previewed it at the end of last segment, but then came back with this segment and talked about the fact that these players have been healthy scratches.
Let me tell you something, Richie. Half the time, I'm not listening to Drew anyways.
We know it's not... It's probably more like three-quarters of the time or four-fifths of
Richie,
the time.
Richie, I listen. I want to hear what you have to say. So I listen to what you have to say, but when Drew's babbling out of the break, I just, you know, whatever. Just throw it to me and we'll talk hockey here. But, yeah. Well, let's be honest, though, Drew. When you talk about Chris Stewart, right, you're talking about the Buffalo Sabres, and you could throw in other players on that team that we're going to hear a lot about, especially when we're talking about insider trading. Pierre LeBrun wrote about this for ESPN and TSN. They're going to be selling Chris Stewart. They're sellers, what I mean. I'm not they're going to sell him, but they're going to be willing to trade Chris Stewart, Drew Stafford, possibly Tyler Myers. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres, guys, they're at the beginning stages of a rebuild.
Stafford and Stewart are both pending UFAs. Myers is a long-term deal.
Myers is a long-term deal, but you think you could maybe, you know, get rid of the contract. But you're right, Richie.
But
Stafford...
Ezzy, I mean, Tyler Myers might want to... That contract might look like an overpay now. $5.5 million, 4 more years mm-hmm. on the deal.
Yep.
Big guy. In a different situation, I think he can be pretty good.
Yep. And that's what I'm just saying. I agree with you. If you wanted to, I guess, rank the players' likelihood of getting traded, I'd agree with you, Richie. Stewart and Stafford are ahead of. And then you hear about that, you know, Tim Murray's possibly, Sabres GM, Tim Murray is possibly willing to trade one of their goalies. But let's get back to Stewart here. He's not a top six forward on most teams. And I think that's what's happening here. And I agree with you. I don't
think.
But
he can play there.
He can play
a role. If you have a wing need, he can play top six.
He can play top six. But if you look at his. I mean, he's got 4 points in 27 games on a terrible team. But I'm just saying, I think that the Sabres right now are kind of. People, GMs are looking at the Sabres and saying, okay, they want to get rid of Stewart. Probably worse than we want to acquire him. And you hear the Boston Bruins, these teams and all that. I don't know if they're necessarily going to trade him to if they want to trade him to an Eastern Conference team versus a Western Conference team. He will be traded, but I do agree with you that I think he'll be traded closer to the trade deadline, not in December.
Boston makes a lot of sense because you can add in on the right wing there. You can put him with a guy like Lucic, really be physical. You know, I think it changes the angles a bit. If you don't want a guy like Eriksson, you want to push him down, maybe play him with Soderberg consistently. I mean, those are options that you have. I think Boston's a nice fit. I think Chris Stewart can play in certain teams, so long as they have strength up the middle. I think that's the kind of guy that you wouldn't mind getting now, but you don't want to trade more than a second-round pick for him, though. That's the thing. And Buffalo's been asking for more and more and more recently, and the question is, have they asked themselves out of getting the value maybe they could have gotten earlier. And that will be something to watch for Tim Murray, because there's going to be a value that he knows he has to get for him because he's a pending UFA. You can't keep him. Like, all the talk about Camilleri, and the weird always part to me is when Camilleri is worth that much in free agency, but not even worth second round pick. I'm not sure if they were even offered for him, Calgary. So I always find that interesting. But I think for Stewart, a second round pick is probably what they're going to have to trade him for if they don't get any other offers.
Moving to Philadelphia, this contract might be untradeable. Vincent LeCavalier has got 6 points in 16 games so far for the Philadelphia Flyers. He's under contract for 3 more years after this season at $4.5 million. Healthy scratch for the last number of games. Is there a market for Vinny LeCavalier?
The only way you're getting rid of Vinny LeCavalier's salary, and the contract was stupid when they signed it, and it looks even worse now, is if you trade some draft picks, if you trade a young player with him, first round pick or prospects, big
and possibly time. Eat some of the salary, right?
Yeah, and possibly I think if you're trading it without eating it, you're having to complement it with prospects and a high pick or one or the other to a team that can afford the salary and needs the prospects, like a Phoenix or Arizona, excuse me, something like that. Or you say, okay, I'll take your problem contract wise. I'll deal with him in the locker room. And I need some young players here. I want some young talent on up front. That's what you're going to have to do. Otherwise, you're going to buy him out.
I think Vinny LeCavalier still has value. You know, people think he's 34 years old, and you mentioned the years left on his contract. And I know Richie has talked about this. We've talked about this before. He can't move like he used to.
That's a problem.
He scored 20 goals in the NHL last year. So, I mean, 20 goal players don't just, goal scorers, pardon me, don't just grow in trees. So, I mean, when you're talking Vinny LeCavalier, he's just fallen out of favor with Craig Berube and the coaching staff there. Obviously, he's a healthy scratch. Now, I know that this segment is all about healthy scratches. But to me, I mean, does a team like the Chicago Blackhawks want a guy, maybe reunite him with Brad Richards? Do they want him to play on a bottom line?
For 1 year, $1 million, they do.
Exactly. So are they willing to take on the 3 more years of his contract?
No.
So, I mean, I do think, though, that there will be a team that will possibly want to acquire him. And if not, I mean, are you looking at a buyout situation?
If you want to acquire him, you better say, okay, I want a first-round pick, at least. Give me a first-round pick in Vinny LeCavalier. And no team with the currency, the fact that draft picks provide you so much value early on, although the GMs are somehow trying to get rid of that by giving massive second deals, they're giving you value in those first 3 years. They're not going to give away a first-round pick to get rid of LeCavalier's contract. They're better off just buying it out.
Moving down the turnpike, we go to New Jersey, where Damian Bruner, at the end of a one-year $2.5 million contract, who's scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, has been sent down to the minors, and the Devils are looking for a trade partner for Mr. Bruner. He's got about $1.575 million left on his contract for this year.
No, I mean, Damian Bruner, he's a tweener scorer who's not going to be overly effective. Guys like Stewart, more physical or more effective, even if they only have 4 points this year. And that was a kind of a, they waited. Lamoriello took a chance. They kind of priced himself out of Detroit. The agent overvalued the player. And he's not worth anything. Maybe somebody takes a flyer on him as a depth forward near the end of the season so they can add a scoring threat who can possibly pop in and out of the lineup. But you're not giving up anything more than a fourth or fifth for Damian Bruner.
Right. And when Richie says tweener, by the way, what he means is he's a guy that really is in and out of a lineup
He's a scorer, but he's not a good enough scorer, and he's not good enough to be a checker, and he's not good enough to be a scorer.
Not a top six forward, certainly, right. Richie. And you guys know I watch a lot of Devils. He's a guy that feels like just yesterday, it was 3 years ago that we were talking about him coming over from Switzerland to play for the Detroit Red Wings, as if he was the second coming of Pavel Datsyuk. He was just all right. He's terrible defensively. Absolutely terrible, lazy defensively. And, you know, Pete DeBoer didn't want him in the lineup. He's played 17 games this year. And as Richie mentioned, he's got 2 goals. So, I mean, he's a guy that there's a reason why he's playing for Albany now. And I agree with Richie. I don't think he has much cachet. Maybe he did for European scouts that were watching him in Switzerland putting up big numbers. But when you throw in today's game, no matter what line you're playing on, you got to be responsible defensively. And, you know, he's a guy that right now doesn't have much value, unfortunately.
Alex Hemsky, we know, was a healthy scratch for the Dallas Stars last night against the Jets. That's the second consecutive game he has been when a healthy scratch. He's got 2 goals, 5 assists for 7 points in 25 games for the Stars. Signed a 3-year, $12 million contract at the beginning of this season. No word that the Stars are really necessarily shopping Hemsky, but is he a guy who's worth calling to see if the Stars want to get out from under a mistake?
Really? Like, I don't think, Drew, this is somebody that they're going to be calling. First off, Jim Nill is not one to make a rash decision. I think that he sees a value in Hemsky adding secondary scoring. I think the Hemsky-Ruff mix might be a little bit odd. There's probably a few of those players that Ruff felt like he got straddled with in Buffalo near the end of his tenure, and he's wondering, why'd you give me another one of these guys? Because the skill level is there, the passing ability is there, the stick handling ability and way to see the ice is there. But he, you know, he's soft, doesn't shoot a lot, and overhandles and doesn't compete all the time. So I think everybody knows what you're going to get from the guy. I don't think there's if you put him on the market, I'm sure a team or two would call, probably more than that, maybe three or four. But I don't see a guy like him moving right now. That you can't make a decision after 25, 30 games when you've seen this guy's career for so long now. It's not like this guy just got into the league.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Rich. You know, you bring over Hemsky, and I've never been a big fan of Hemsky. You know, you talk about his skill level and all that, and then you just nailed it, Richie. He doesn't compete on a regular basis. He's a very frustrating player to watch. Yeah. When you see what he can do sometimes, you've seen highlight goals back in the day with the Oilers and then, you know, a little bit with the Senators last year. But, you know, he struggled to put the puck in the net again, and he's been a bit on the second line, and then Lindy Ruff brought him down to the bottom six forward role, and then he's been in the press box now for 3 games. So I don't think he's moving because they signed him to a deal hoping. You got to remember too, again, not that you guys aren't aware of this, but the Dallas Stars are looking pretty top heavy right now, and he's a guy that they'll count on for secondary scoring after you get off the Ben Sagan line. So
good point.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
And the last one is sort of probably the most interesting of all these guys, Jeremy Marin of the Chicago Blackhawks. He was a 2009 second round pick for the Hawks. He has sort of issued a message or an ultimatum to the Blackhawks: play me or trade me. The 23-year-old Blackhawks winger. What's your thoughts on that?
Tell him to sit down. Who's he? Stan Bowman, tell him to sit down. Okay, I'll just let you sit down while I play other guys.
I've never heard of...
Ultimatum.
I've never heard of a guy who has no points in 15 games asking for a team to play him or trade him. 0 points in 15 games. Do we need to continue on here?
No, that's enough.
I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's a good player. As you mentioned, he was a second-round pick. He spent most of his time with the Chicago Blackhawks organization playing for Rockford. I mean, he's a point-a-game player in the AHL. But, I mean, you're talking about the defending, not defending, but Stanley Cup
perennial Stanley Cup
perennial
contender.
Stanley Cup champion. So, I mean, who's he taking out of that lineup?
Wasn't he in the Bufflin trade? I don't think
he was
drafted by Chicago.
Yeah, I think he was.
I think he was part of the Bufflin trade.
Sorry, I didn't say he was drafted by Chicago. I said he was a second-round pick.
He said by Chicago.
Oh, okay.
But in any event,
was the Thrasher's draft.
You know, been waiting a while for this guy to get going. There are people telling me years ago this guy was going to be something. So I'm giving them an ultimatum now. Woo. Stan Bowman's really scared about that one.
Well, now he's making it harder for himself, Rich, because now he's for sure not going to be played.
Sit down. See, this is the thing. When you're Marin, this is the problem that you have. You're not costing them any money, so they don't care. That's the thing. I mean, you look at him. He's costing $800,000 this year, next year. They're not in a rush to trade the guy. Basically making minimum level money.
Sure.
You can suck it up.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Wednesday evening with NHL Midweek. It's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I've been told by our friend Aaron that you should get your latke order in as soon as possible. because Hanukkah's coming up next week.
1 week from today, in fact.
Bernstein's is known for those latkes.
They are fabulous
latkes. So you got to get your order in now.
The Mindell family is actually, or pardon, I guess it would be the Silver family, technically, my mom's side of the family. We're having a Hanukkah brunch at Bernstein's this coming Sunday.
Wow, that should be lovely.
Should be lovely. Yeah. And I might have a latke or even two.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of latkes.
I wasn't invited.
You're not part of our family.
I thought I was.
Not
in
the least.
That hurt. I've always considered Sheldon slash dad to be kind of like an uncle.
Yeah, well, that's fine. This is Tannis' side. Tannis says she wants nothing to do with you.
No, that's not true. Tannis has always been very good to me, and I love Tannis, and I think I'd like to be part of the extended family at the very least.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's a public restaurant, so you can come sit at a separate table from us, and we'll wave at you. How about that?
I'll take that.
Okay. In the holiday spirit, the San Jose Sharks put out a fantastic music video and song earlier this week. Here's part of that song.
Days are here and I want to look fly, want to look sharp, sharp as cheddar. That's why I got me a holiday sweater.
Made of wool with a holiday print. Mine's so bright it'll make you swim.
Now, we're going to talk over it for a little bit. You really have to see the video to do it full justice as all these... Here, play the chorus. Turn the chorus up, Remo. What is this? These are a bunch of the young San Jose Sharks players. Thomas Hertl, Matthew Nieto, John Scott is in there. Our good buddy Randy Hahn, the broadcaster, is in there. Dan Rusinowski, the radio guy, I believe, is also in there. There's a whole number of the younger San Jose Sharks players rapping to this song, while wearing ugly Christmas sweaters.
I think the Christmas sweaters.
Who cares?
The Christmas sweaters.
It's
and
ridiculous.
By the way, pun is intended here. Have jumped the shark.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Have they not? I mean, like, everybody's wearing a Christmas sweater. It's like funny, but like, enough is enough here.
I think the irony of it is, if there's one place you wouldn't wear a Christmas sweater, it's probably San Jose because it's, you know, not a lot of snow, not a lot of, you know, Christmas weather, as it were. In the Bay Area.
I don't know. I just feel like everybody, it's like a trendy thing to do now. Everybody has to wear a stupid Christmas sweater. It's like not really funny anymore.
Before you object too much there, Mr. Pollock, I believe, didn't you not buy a Hanukkah sweater this year?
No, I bought it off some website, and then I got an email a week later telling me that they were out of stock and I'm going to refund my money. It's like, what?
So they didn't want your business that badly?
Apparently they didn't, but is this what we've come to with the internet, where things like this are talked about?
Here you go. Unabomber is going to...
No, but like, who cares? I mean, can we talk about something of substance here? This is junk.
Okay, Evander Kane's suspension, 2 games. Good or bad? Fair or not fair?
I think it's fine. You can't hit guys from behind like that. I don't know. I mean, can you learn your lesson after a while? He just plays undisciplined hockey. I understand there's a passion there, and there's an eagerness to be physical, but you have to be able to rein that in and play in a more controlled way, and he hasn't been able to do that. I don't have an issue. I really think that those kind of penalties should be called more often because I think they're very dangerous, and I think some of you talk about concussions. The hits from behind are worrisome to me, especially in youth hockey. And if the NHL players continue to do it and the young players deem it to be acceptable, especially when players... defensemen now turning their back and almost asking for it. Not in this case, a little different, but defensemen turning their back and almost asking for it to draw penalties. I think you're putting safety on the line. I don't like that.
Yeah, I think we were expecting him to get at least 1 game, so he gets 2 games. It was a bad hit, and you knew he was going to get the suspension, obviously, because he got the major penalty and the misconduct. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the NHL is, I think, got it right here. They want to take this out of the game, and it was a bad hit. And you know, Evander Kane, I'm sure, isn't going to be happy that he's losing the money. Because he's going to be able to do less push-ups now.
No, he'll still do more push-ups. He's got more money where that came from, I think.
Yeah, but I think there's less stacks now.
Like yeah, that, too. Yeah. I mean, why is this guy posting pictures of that? Who cares? I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand why these things occur at all. I really don't. I could go on a rant about that, too, but I'll save that one.
You sure?
Yeah, I'll save that one.
Okay.
Put the holiday song on.
Can't
again.
Give him any more attention for doing.
Put the sweater song again, Remo.
I can't give this guy any more attention for doing stupid things.
Hear that
things
song
like
again.
That. I mean,
it bothered you more than I thought it would. I mean, we were talking about it obviously off air. It seems to have bothered you more than
why
I expected.
Why are you doing that? Just stop doing these things. I mean, do you think that the team likes that you create a distraction? Do you think that your teammates like that? Or the organization, the coach? The coach has to address that. Keep doing that. I'm sure the coach will really like playing you a lot when you keep making him answer questions about you like that.
Fair enough.
Think about it in that perspective. I mean, never mind the money thing, and I think that's disrespectful in certain ways. And I just don't understand why anybody does that, period. But it's not just him. Other people do that, do and flop money. So it's not just him. But the idea is, from a team perspective, you are making other people answer for your actions. And as a general rule, people don't like doing that. And if you want to be liked in the locker room, you won't do that.
That's it for this Wednesday in NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Dean Brown and Drew Spivak for joining us. In case you missed the show, it will be available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. We'll be back Saturday at 12 noon with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.